Hi, we are back talking with Jose Padilla and Remy Baca about an event that occurred in August 1945. Very important event. Okay, we are up there under the rocks taking shelter from the August rainstorm, some lightning, thunder, a flash of light, a streak of light appears at the ridge above where you both are. What happens next, Remy?
Well, after that, Jose suggested that we go out there and take a look, and we did. We walked up and over. And
up and over the top. About how high up from you was the top of the ridge? 50 feet, 100 feet?
Probably around 50.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you got up there, you had a good view of the surrounding terrain. Was it a nice...
Downhill.
Okay, downhill on the other side, all right.
Yeah. And we got over there, and the first thing we saw, of course, was some of the brush appeared to have been on fire. That's that creosote. It's oily,
Right.
Call it greasewood at that time.
Was there smoke?
A little bit of smoke coming out of there.
Okay.
But mostly dust.
How far from the top of the ridge down the other side, approximately?
Probably maybe 100 yards or so.
Okay. Good.
To the edge of the site.
Okay, I didn't mean to put words in your mouth, but you looked down there and you saw there's a little bit of smoke, but a lot of dust.
A lot of dust up in the air.
Okay, all right. And this is still raining, is it, Jose?
No, it just quit raining.
Okay.
The steam of that ground, was just coming up.
Because the ground is hot and the water on it, a little bit of steam. All right, okay. Vapors, whatever. Okay, Remy, go ahead.
So it's so we start walking downhill, and the ground's hot. It's warm. It's warm from the weather, and I guess from the humidity, the rain, as such. And the first thing we saw is this. It's kind of like a great giant size in today's words, because at that time there wasn't any. But a road grader goes in with about a 100-foot wide blade.
Got it.
And just tears that apart.
Scrapes all the vegetation right off?
Oh, yeah. It scrapes rocks and everything. A couple of foot deep. That's the first thing we saw, and then as we went through the...
Oh, this is hold on now. This is a big gouge.
It's a gouge.
It's a straight line gouge?
Well, not exactly straight, but it's about probably 100 yards long.
Okay, how wide?
Probably between 75, 100 foot.
That's a wide gouge.
Right, yeah.
100 foot, 75 foot wide, 100 yards long. Jose, do you remember it as being that big?
Yes, it was.
Okay. All right. So, and what are you saying to yourselves at this time? What the heck is this?
Well, it was kind of scary, but we proceeded to get to check and see what it was.
Sure.
And...
And this, again, is about a foot deep, you estimate, in through the sand? And
yeah, it would have been about deeper than a foot.
It really plowed up the ground then?
Yes. And it was a good football field long.
Okay. All right. And you knew, obviously, that it ended, and you turned and began to walk, I guess, on this... This gouge toward the end?
Yes, we did. We didn't get too close to it, but it's we got close down to where that an old road used to cross.
Okay, so the gouge crossed an old dirt road track of some kind.
Yes, it did.
Okay.
So I got my binoculars out and was looking out through it. I could see where it dead-ended right underneath a little ridge there.
Okay, the gouge ran into a ridge and stopped.
And stopped, yes. It kind of made a like a right turn.
Before it stops.
Because that the gauge wasn't a straight shot.
Okay. No vegetation left on the ground at all. It was stripped.
It was stripped. Just like if a caterpillar or something would have gone through there.
And let's say it's 100 yards long and there's a slight right turn toward the end, and then it runs into the rocky ridge and stops. How much of that 100 yards would be that last little leg where it made a little shift, approximately? Just in your mind's eye.
It'd be about 100 feet.
Okay. All right. So maybe a third the length of the total gouge was that last leg where it turned to the right?
Just about, yes.
Okay. All right. Do you remember it that way as well, Remy?
Absolutely. It dug itself into the sandy soil there.
Mm-hmm.
It dug itself into it.
At what point, Remy, did you and Jose see something there? And did it take the binoculars to see it, or could you see it pretty well without binoculars?
Well, we could see that there was something there, but we couldn't quite make it out because of the dust.
Still dust.
And the heat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so essentially what we did is we went back up on top of the ridge.
Retraced your steps back
cool
up.
Cool off, mm-hmm. You know, cool off and rethink. And about that time, I pretty well had enough, you know. I'd seen more than I wanted to see.
Okay.
This was really scary. You know?
All right.
And I want to go home.
Okay.
Jose said, "Now let's plow on," you know.
Well, all right. Hold on. We have to pause here just for a minute. I can understand that. You're 7 years old. This strange gouge in the desert, 100 yards long about. Something in it that turned right and then slammed into this ridge and buried itself partially. For all of you who are online, please go to the guest box at rents.com and click on the link there that my webmaster James has put up there under Jose and Remy's names, and you'll see a clay model replica that they have been kind enough to provide exclusively for the program tonight to give you an idea of what it was that they ultimately saw. We'll get a description of that as we continue in a minute or two. Remy and Jose. Okay, Remy, I understand. 7 years old. This is, I don't know if you guys went to the movies back then, if you, you know, whatever. But this is before the flying saucer age, of course. This is before the term was even coined. But there were certainly memories of War of the Worlds, which had happened not too many years before. Before you were born, though, Remy, maybe Jose was just born at that, it was 1938, 39, something.
The closest movie theater from San Antonio was about 11 miles.
Okay. All right. That had the hand crank projector, did it?
Probably. I didn't go to a movie until I was older.
Well, you guys invented the prototype for the cell phone, so that's okay. Don't worry about it. Look where you are now. All right.
That's right.
Let's go back there now. You go back up on the ridge, you retrace your steps to a degree, you're sitting up there, you're looking down, there's still dust in the air. It must have been a heck of a lot of dust, huh?
There was a lot of dust, yeah.
All right, and Remy says, "I want to go home." And Jose says,
Let's go on, let's keep going.
Jose,
let's
take a look. What did you tell him?
Well, I'm always been the type of guy, you know, that if I see danger ahead, you know, and I have to go through, I'll stand up to it.
Okay.
So I told him, you know, let's go ahead and check it out.
Okay. And Remy said, go ahead, I'll be right behind you.
That's right. Absolutely.
All right, so how did what did you do next, Jose?
Well, I got my binoculars out and was looking through it, and as I seen, you know, some of the dust that they're just settling down, there was some things moving in there.
You saw movement?
Movements in there.
Okay. Did you think at the time maybe an airplane had crashed?
No, at the time, you know, that I was thinking about that A-bomb, another A-bomb they were testing.
Oh, my. So you thought that maybe they had something to do with the atomic bomb? You certain when that blast went off, you all knew it.
Oh, yes.
And you thought this, we think it could have been another bomb or something?
Yes. That's what I thought, you know.
Oh, my. All right.
And Jose had good reason to think that because we used to call him the little atomic man. He was much closer to ground zero than I was.
Uh-huh.
And him and his mom, his family were. His mom went blind, I think, on one eye due to the exposure.
They didn't warn everyone to look away?
What? No, we didn't know that was even taking place.
I understand. And yet it was close enough to have damaged your mom's eyesight.
Well, not only my mom's eyesight, you know, all the cattle that we had on the ranch there, and also the ranchers in there, they come out afterwards with they call it a pink eye.
Yeah.
And come to find out, you know, that wasn't the problem, you know. It was just that...
They were burned.
Burned.
Were they blind?
Yes, they were. We had to kill a lot of them, cattle in there that had cancer.
Wow. Did you see the mushroom cloud?
Oh, yes, I experienced that.
You must have thought it was some force from hell or something.
Well, at first, you know, I thought there was a car coming, you know, but my mom said, you know, it can't be a car, you know. Then I said, well, maybe the sun come out, you know, and it was about 200 times... You know, brighter than the sun. You know?
What time of day was the Trinity blast? Or night?
5:26.
A in the morning.
In the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It was still dark. And all of a sudden, you know, the sun doesn't come out that bright.
Yeah. Wow.
When we went outside, and it was only me, my mom, and I. You know that. And I ran inside the house, back in the house. And she stood up. Through the crack of the door, again, she was looking at with one eye, and that's the eye that became blind on her.
Wow. About how far from your house was the blast, do you remember?
About 20 miles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, let's go back up to the ridge so that nightmare is still with you. But you obviously are a very brave young man, and let's get Remy credit, too. He didn't cut and run. He stayed right there. All right, so the dust is starting to settle. You see some movement at the end of this gouge that stops in the little ridge.
Right.
All right. Go ahead, Jose.
Okay. And we start approaching it, and we got kind of goosebumps.
How close did you get to it at that
probably
time?
Probably about... 200 feet.
You walk down. The brush is, how tall is mesquite? A couple of feet?
Well, a couple of feet, you know, but we were short guys too, you know. I mean,
yeah. Okay. All right, so you move down toward it. Dust is settling.
When I started seeing those, well, I could say, you know, little people walking, you know, moving around.
You could see them upright walking around.
Yes. It looked like they were excited, you know, desperate or something.
Moving quickly?
Yes.
Were they colored in any uniform, or what did they look like?
Like a rustic gray-white or overalls.
Was it tight-fitting or loose-fitting? What could you tell?
I couldn't see too good on it, but I noticed that... That overalls looked like they had a hood on.
Mm-hmm.
or maybe they didn't have no hair.
Okay. So it was kind of a grayish white.
Yeah, grayish white.
Okay. Were they all about the same color, one solid gray-white color?
Yes.
Okay. And were you looking through your binoculars at this time, or could you see them with the naked eye?
No, with the binoculars.
Okay. When you looked at them, were you able to count them? How many did you see?
There were about three.
Okay. Were they climbing in and out of anything, or were they just walking around?
No, they were just moving around. Like if, for example, sometimes someone hit themselves, you know, and they're out of balance.
Staggering around?
Staggering, yes.
Oh. Did you let Remy look through the binoculars?
He didn't want to look. He was a little bit scared on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just decided, you know, that we could return back to the ranch. Because he was getting the sun was going down, you know, it was getting a little dark.
Did you tell him what you saw?
Yes, I did.
Do you remember, Remy, what he said to you?
Right. He was describing them, and I had my hands, I remember, over my face, and I would look through the fingers, look at these things, and what I would see was they move, you know, they move like a flash when they moved.
You mean really fast?
They are rapid, yeah, like a flash. They're here, and then they're over there. That's what I saw.
Okay, you're a couple hundred feet away.
Right.
Now, Jose's got the binoculars.
He's got the binoculars.
He's seeing much closer than you are.
Oh, absolutely.
But you could definitely see individual humanoid-looking shapes.
And not only that, but one of the things that really brought things to, you know, to a peak was the sounds that came out of it. I don't know whether you've ever hunted jackrabbits, but when you hunt jackrabbits and you shoot one, it gives a sound, a real high-pitched sound, like a baby crying.
Okay.
And when I heard that, boy, I tell you, you know.
So it sounded...
I knew somebody was in pain in there.
And was this sound being repeated over and over again, or was it a continual...
It would come on, you know, come on and off. You'd hear that.
But it sounded like someone was in pain, someone was in
right.
distress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was clearly heard by you as well, Jose?
Yes, it is. I do.
What are you thinking at that point?
Well, thinking about this. Someone's hurt. Should we go in there and help? And then at the same time, you know... I kind of backed up too, you know. You could have been dangerous.
Do you think at that point you sensed, or do you remember sensing that these might not be regular little kids or regular people? They might be something different?
You know, I couldn't say, you know, that since I never experienced anything like that
right.
before.
We had nothing to compare with.
I understand.
We're small town folks, you know.
Well, you couldn't do much more than you did.
That was all we could do.
How much time do you think you spent looking and listening? It's a long time ago, but these things I'm sure are probably as vivid in your mind as they could possibly be at this point. It's something that I would never forget. How much time do you think you observed them? Jose?
Probably about less than 30 minutes.
You had a good look then.
Yeah,
okay.
we were there, you know. I thought, you know, I said, you know, if it wouldn't have been getting dark,
yeah,
I think we would have got to it.
And so if it hadn't been so late in the day, you would have gone down.
I would.
Okay, well, it sounds like you would have. All right, stand by. We shall pause for our top of the hour break. A fascinating story for you. First time ever on radio. And I'm very honored to have Jose and Remy here. We will continue our conversation right after this short timeout. All right, welcome back. I'm Jeff Rentz. That's R-E-N-S-E. And two very special guests tonight. We're making radio history by giving you an actual eyewitness description from both these young men at the time, 9 and 7, about what they saw in 1945 August by way of the crash of an unidentified flying object and the walking around of at least three small humanoid beings. Talking to Jose Padilla and Remy Baca. All right, Jose, let's go back to the interview now. You were telling me just at the break that had it been a little earlier in the afternoon, you think you would have gone down there to try to help. Was the sound of someone apparently injured and in pain the compelling reason you would have gone down there? Was that, do you think, playing a key role?
That was the reason. That someone might have been hurt, and I would have liked to help, you know.
Sure. Well, you were out there trying to help that mother and her calf. It's the same kind of thing. You have that feeling of wanting to assist, that sound of pain. Was this noise, Remy, continual after the dust cleared? You began to hear it, and did it continue for about the full 30 minutes you were there observing the situation?
Yes, it would come on and off.
Give me an idea. Like it would whine or a high-pitched moan or however you describe it for what? Five to ten seconds? How long?
Oh, maybe 5 to 10 seconds, the real high-pitched baby cry.
And then it would fade away. And then it would, how long before it would come on again?
Oh, probably maybe a few seconds, 30, 40 seconds, and then it would come on.
So it began again fairly soon. This continued regularly.
Right. And, I mean, it really hit you on, you know, in your heart, you know? I mean, you felt this, you were overcome by sorrow. You were still sorry for whatever it was.
That's maybe the most dignified and heroic of all human responses, to want to help another living being in pain. I can understand it. More pure, perhaps, in children than in most adults. Fascinating. Was it a loud noise, Jose, or just something you could hear clearly? Going back a long time, I know, but do your best.
Something that we could hear clearly.
Mm-hmm.
That is, someone was in pain. So, actually, I guess there was someone in there that was hurt.
Okay. The next thing you could see with the binoculars was what? You saw the three beings, and they were darting around back and forth. Apparently, I'm guessing, relatively close to whatever it was that had moved into the rocks, crashed into the rocks. They were staying in one area, were they, pretty much?
Yeah, they were staying in that in the vehicle.
Did you see them, as Remy described, darting back and forth, almost as if they were flashing from point to point back and forth? Or were they just walking very quickly? You remember that?
Are you talking to Remy?
Either. Jose.
They were moving very quickly, like...
Could you see their legs walking? Or did you just see the bodies moving?
Just the bodies moving real frequently.
Was the sagebrush, the mesquite, was that interfering with a view of their legs, or was it just the distance?
The distance, it was the dust in there, shrubbery, that was covering quite a bit of it.
Okay. But could you see with the binoculars, I don't know how powerful they were, but could you see facial features?
I could see that the heads, you know, they were like a bald, no hair.
Okay. Were they shaped a little strangely? Did you notice?
they were like, you know, when you shave your head off,
mm-hmm.
you know, the head usually has a different shape, you know.
Okay. All right. But you didn't see eyes at that distance?
No.
Okay. And they were all uniform in their color,
right.
grayish-white. No sign of belt or jackets
no,
or anything.
No, it was just a smooth, shiny outfit. Or
whatever.
They were wearing one or not.
Okay. All right. Hard. You don't know if they were wearing something or that was skin. It was you couldn't tell. Now, were you able to see in the late afternoon, fading light, a vehicle of any kind? Could you see a craft there, Jose? Any hardware? Did you see a machine? Did you see pieces of metal at that point?
Pieces of metal, yes, there was. They were scattered.
In the area where the little beings were walking?
Yes, there were.
Remy, could you see any metal down there, or what would appear to be metal of some kind?
Yeah, there was. Well, there was a, like a, you know, if you're talking about maybe like a 15-foot piece
mm-hmm.
that you know of the craft that was damaged.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, you know, a big, and they were in the craft as such, and there was, you know, there was a lot of debris around there, and that's where I picked up that little piece of aluminum. Looking stuff.
Even 200 feet away, there were pieces?
Yeah.
Okay, now, something I want to be clear about. Jose, when you were watching, and Remy, when you were watching these three small beings, were they apparently inside or outside the craft or both?
Inside the craft.
You were looking inside a broken craft of some kind, and that's made clear by all of you who are online, who can go see the clay replica that I guess it was Remy. Was it your wife that made that?
That's right.
Okay, well, she did a fine job. Now you can see, all of you, approximately what, and Jose and Remy got together and they agree this is approximately what they saw. It's a disc shaped craft, as much as we can determine, with a huge piece torn off of one side, exposing the inside. There is also shown in the clay model a round bulge off-centered, not in the center of the disc, but off-centered to one side. Could you see that top of the craft at that point, Jose, with the binoculars? Or could you just see in the side? You could see part of the top.
Part of it, since it was laying cockeyed.
Okay. You were actually able to look inside the craft with the binoculars, and Remy, you could see inside from about 200 feet away and see these beings moving quickly back and forth inside the craft.
That's right.
Was there any light inside the craft, or was it rather darkish in there?
The only light was what, natural light.
Okay.
There was nothing flashing or anything like that.
Could you see any detail inside the craft at all with the binoculars? Did you see structure? Did you see textures? Did you see shapes? Did you see anything, Jose?
No, I didn't.
Okay. And they walked back and forth. You, for the entire time you were watching, one of them or something seemed to be seriously injured and moaning or wailing out in some kind of sound in pain. Any other noises, any other indications, any lights flashing, anything at all?
No, not at all. No lights were flashing at all in it.
Okay.
The other interesting part of that craft was the fin. You know, what we show on the model?
Yes.
That was a fin probably about 7 foot long, maybe 5 foot wide. At the base, and, you know, it was like a thin, I guess is what you could best describe it.
Looked like it was something of an aerodynamic nature.
Right, yeah, right.
Okay.
So we didn't know whether that was the back or the front.
I understand. Clearly the side of the craft had been torn off. Could you see, either one of you, the approximate, for lack of a better terminology here, the front and the back of it, or from end to end of it, or was it buried so much that you could only pretty much see part of the side, the part that was torn open? Could you see the whole thing?
When they loaded it up on the flatbed truck.
Then you did, okay, but not then. All right, I want to move ahead now. I think we're pretty much covered as far as what you saw at that point. Did you then decide it was time to go home?
Yes.
Okay, and as you pulled back and moved away, the sound of what we're projecting here was an injured being continued?
Yes, it did.
What were you saying to each other as you walked away?
Well,
you remember?
I felt like going back, you know, but then it got scary, you know, and he convinced me, you know, that we should get out of there.
Okay.
What I was saying, you know, we had a favorite saying that whenever you were surprised, you know, by something, then we usually said, "Oh, San Antone," you know, and I kept saying that. I couldn't stop. Because I was so, I mean, it was just something that so different and so unexpected.
Totally out of this world at that
absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. All right, stand by. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. Let's get right back to our guests, Remy and Jose. Okay, Jose, so you pull back, you hear the sound of that mournful sound. You go back, you, I guess, get the horses, and you ride home. Let's take it right back home.
Okay, we climb on the horses, and we got home at the ranch house. It was dark already.
Mm-hmm.
My father was waiting for us with the results of the cow, and we gave him the report of it. And I told him that we had found something else. That's when he started asking, you know, and we started explaining about what we had seen there. The big gouge in the dirt, you know, and this object, you know, that was crashed in there.
Mm-hmm.
And also the little guys.
Mm-hmm.
In it. And my dad told us that it's probably some weather balloon, and we'll go and check it out in a couple of days.
Remy, did you have a piece of metal with you?
Do I have it?
Did you?
Did I have it? Yes. At that time, I had it.
Mm-hmm.
Had it in my pocket.
Did you show Jose's dad?
No. No. I just had it in.
Okay.
In my pockets, my overalls.
Back to the crash site for just a minute. You're 200 feet away. Were there pieces of metal commonly around you, or just occasionally?
There were pieces of metal commonly around us.
Little pieces.
Big pieces. Mm-hmm. 1/2 inch, 2-inch pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I want to move. We have a lot of ground to cover, so I want to move forward fairly quickly. So, Remy, take us to when you went back there.
Well, after we made a report to his dad, and he listened to me. We had dinner there. They took me home on the truck, the horse there.
Mm-hmm.
Then I pick it up later on. Then a couple of days later, on Saturday. We went out to the site.
Who?
Myself, Jose, Jose's dad, and he had asked one of the guys that was a state policeman, Eddie Apodaca, to accompany us. I imagine he made a report to him.
How'd you get out there?
He drove him and Jose's dad. We're in the state police car, and we went on the pickup.
Okay.
And we got there, parked, and walked up.
And looked down, and what'd you see?
And we looked down, and oh, San Antone.
Oh, my.
Nothing. You know, we looked down, and it, you know, what the heck, it's gone? big surprise, and Eddie and his dad kind of look at us, you know. And so they said, well, let's continue on, let's go take a look. And so we continued on down, and holy moly, you know, when you get about halfway down that hill, then you can see it. It's there. And so it had never left.
Still buried in the ridge.
Still buried in the ridge, but it just fitted so nicely into the terrain, whether somebody had, you know, put the dirt and the weeds on top of it, or whether that was just the way it naturally ended up,
mm-hmm.
we don't know.
Okay.
But
so.
What we do know is it was still there. So we walked up and got you know, fairly close to it, and then they told us to stay there and they'd go look.
And they walked on ahead.
And they walked on ahead.
Okay, could you see them clearly walking up to it?
Right.
Okay.
They walked on ahead, and so we stood there talking back and forth to Jose, and I said, do you hear those sounds anymore? And he says, no, it's just, it's strange. He said, why is that? Well, he says, you know, look, it's just, where's all that stuff that was on the ground? It's gone.
The pieces of metal.
Right. It's gone. And so then, you don't hear the little hombrecitos, you know, the little guys, you know,
mm-hmm.
the creatures, you know. And I said, no, don't hear them. And so then they come out of the craft.
And what, you mean your friend, the state policeman?
The state policeman.
And Jose's dad.
And Jose's dad.
Did you see them walk into the craft?
Yes, we saw.
Did they have to bend over to walk into the craft?
Well, it was big. It was a big, hole.
Okay.
About 15 foot tall, and it's still the even though it was, you know, partially underground, they could, you know, kind of lean over and walk in.
Okay, so they walked in. This craft, as you think about it now, to have made a gouge like that, we're going to go to a break here in just a minute.
Sure.
Would have been, what's your best guess, Remy? How big?
How tall? About as tall as the outside of a building. We determined that that was probably about 14 foot tall.
Right. And that's the total thickness of the craft.
Uh-huh.
And the whole the hole in the side opened up big enough for your Jose's dad and the state patrolman to walk in and out.
That's
the
right.
The diameter of the craft.
The length of it.
Yeah.
It was. Oh God. The length of it was probably 30 foot.
Okay. Okay, all right, excellent. We'll pause and come right back and find out what happened next when the state patrolman and Jose's dad emerged from this craft. And another half hour to go, so don't go anywhere. Okay, and right back with you, Jeff Rentz with Remy and Jose. As you look at those pictures of the replica, you can see the side torn open, and that's about the total craft, 14 feet tall enough for two adult men to walk into. When your dad came out and his friend, the state policeman, Jose, they came walking up to you too, I guess, what happened?
They told us, you know, that there was no such thing as a little hombrecitos in there.
Okay.
And, we don't, you know, maybe they ran away or someone picked them up.
Okay, it would make sense that they might have been extracted, picked up by some of their own kind. That makes sense.
So.
What did they say was inside? What did they tell you?
They didn't mention anything about that. They, I believe, Podaca, you know, the state police.
Yeah.
Told him and us not to say anything about it.
He did tell you that?
Yes.
Okay, but what? Let me do this another way. What was? How long did they spend inside the craft?
Oh, probably about 10-12 minutes.
Did you see them more or less disappear inside of it, or could you see them at all times?
When
they were in the craft.
In the craft?
Could you see them walking around inside of it? Did they disappear? Was it so big that they went into a place you couldn't see them and then came back out?
No, you could see very visible in there, you know.
Okay. All right. When they came up to you, what was their demeanor? What was their disposition? What was the expression on their faces?
They had a different expression, you know. But before, you know, we had, my dad and I had found some weather balloons, you know.
Yes.
And the military that had approached them and told them, you know, not to mess around with that, you know.
Right.
If they find any, you know, to just return them. And that's what we used to do with them.
Okay.
And at that time, you know, the state policemen and my dad were just talking. I don't know what they were talking about. They decided, you know, that we'd just get out of there, you know.
Did they say anything about the inside?
No, they didn't.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Okay. All right. Okay, let's move ahead, Remy, to when the Army showed up.
Well,
Excuse me, but Jose, I assume you guys left right after that.
Yes, we did.
Okay,
that's
all right.
Yeah.
All right, very good. Okay, Remy?
We left. And what Jose's dad said, he says, well, he says, you know, the cop, Eddie, he says, well, this is, you know, that belongs to the military and they'll be coming to get it.
Okay, so his view was this was a piece of our property somehow.
So it belongs to them.
Okay, all right.
And they'll be here.
Okay.
As such, and so, and Jose's dad says, you know, you need to watch what you say, says, because your dad works for the government, you know, and we don't want to get him in trouble. He hasn't been there on that job all that long.
Okay, so the idea was, I think I'm hearing is that Jose's dad and the state policeman felt this was some kind of secret American military technology, probably. Did you get that impression, or did they think it might have been something else?
Well, I know it was important. And how important it was proved out later on when the couple of days later when Jose and I, he had come over to the house. And we picked up some chilies and corn from the garden, some grapes, vegetables, because we had a vegetable garden, to take to them, tomatoes, because they, you know, they come like bunches, you know, got to get rid of them.
Sure.
So we put a couple of bags together, and we went over to the back to the house. And when we got there, we noticed there was a soldier standing outside the screen door. And Mr. Padilla was talking to him through the screen and such. We went into the kitchen to the back part and put the sacks on the table. And then we walked over there to where Mr. Padilla was. And about the time that we got there, you know, he invited him in and shook hands with him. And he shook our hands, soldier, and that's when they started their conversation. Regarding the object that was out there, he referred to it as a weather balloon, an experimental weather balloon, and that they needed to get that out of there, and was making arrangements for it.
Okay.
And essentially, when he said that, I said, "Wow, that, you know, that's really important." Sergeant Avila was the guy that was talking. He's also, of course, you must remember that we're talking Spanish, you know.
Yeah.
It would be a long time before I spoke English. First graders, you know, you're learning, it takes a long time. So we're speaking Spanish, and he knew the language, he knew the culture, he knew the people, you know. So so he was, now, of course, I said, yeah, that's the guy you send. You know, you don't want to send somebody that doesn't understand the culture.
Exactly.
You know? You want to keep things tight. That's the way to do it.
Okay, let's go back out to the site. Were you there when they loaded the object on the flatbed truck?
Yes, I was.
When was that? The next day?
No, that was about a week later.
Okay.
It took a lot of work.
How did you know that they would be out there a week later?
Well, I didn't, but Jose came over and he picked me up before that, and he showed me what they were doing. We went out there and looked, you know, from the ridge.
Did they see you looking down at them?
No way. We're not going to do that.
Okay.
We're out there, you know, hiding amongst the brush, looking through Jose's binoculars.
Okay. They have to dig it out, do you remember? How do they get it out, and how do they lift it up onto the truck?
Well, essentially what they did was they built this rack on this flatbed truck. You've seen these racks that they use. I call them racks. I don't know that much about, you know, about construction and so forth, but I've seen those racks on these trucks that transport glass.
Sure.
Okay, and they're tilted.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. They built one on the, well, they put one on there. I don't know where they built it or whether,
yeah.
But they put one on there.
Yeah.
And then they had a crane. And they backed that truck back, jackknifed it in there, and then the crane sat on the side of the driver's side over, and they pulled that up and drug it over to the truck, lifted it, and laid it on that rack.
So it was sitting flat on the truck?
No,
it was
sitting
vertical.
Sidewise. Yeah, it was
up on its side,
big on the side and extended probably 2 to 3 feet on either side. You could tell that.
Okay, we have to break. We'll come right back. I want to know if they use cables. How did they grab hold of it? And we'll continue in just a couple minutes. Okay, and right back to our conversation here. All right, so they put the craft on its side. Jose, was it up on its side with the ripped open portion up to the side or down? Do you remember?
No, the ripped part was to the outside on the bottom.
Okay.
They had a shell built on the bottom of that A-frame.
Okay. All right, I've got you. Now, could you see with the binoculars inside the craft, did you see any detail at all? Remy?
Just shreds, like there was some shreds of the material that it was constructed of.
Wreckage, debris,
debris.
Damage.
Okay.
Jose?
Yes?
Same thing.
Same thing, just shredded pieces of metal, you know.
Okay. Did you see any colors inside?
No.
Just gray and did you seem to be able to see wires and things like that, or did it look a little more simple than that, like just shreds of?
It was more shreds than anything else, you know. Since
okay, was the top fin, Remy, thinner than the clay model we see there?
Oh, absolutely.
So it was a thin aerodynamic fin on the top. It wasn't a compartment necessarily for the occupants.
Well.
Or it could have been. You just don't
know. It was big enough that it could have been, but you know, we didn't.
Okay.
Didn't know.
Was there any visible marking on this craft? Any symbols, designs, any colors or anything at all that would give you anything to remember?
Well, on the crash side, on the damaged side, of course, you couldn't see too much. The other side was sitting up a little bit elevated, and underneath there were some orifices.
Meaning on the bottom.
The bottom of the craft.
There were some holes.
Uh-huh.
Were these holes uniformly located, or were they random? And
well, they seem to be uniformly located.
How many?
Well, what I saw was about 3 of them. There may have been more.
Fairly large?
Probably maybe 12 by 20, something like that. You know, and they were like lemon-shaped.
Inches?
Right.
Okay, lemon-shaped, 12 by 20, maybe 1 by 2 foot lemon-shaped. Okay, oval shaped.
Right.
Like more of an oval rather than a perfect round?
Yeah, it would seem to be, you know, I mean, the only thing, of course, you know, is an exhaust system, right?
Something like that.
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jose, what did you see?
That's just about it. It was like an oval shape, more like a little more than an oval shape, like a racetrack.
Okay. Gotcha.
And it looked like it might have been like an intake or exhaust, you know.
Okay. Or maybe vertical lift. Pushing it up.
Is that
or
a
whatever.
Landing gear or whatever? Yeah.
Okay. So the whole craft was smooth.
Yes, it was.
Except for the damage.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No designs, no hieroglyphics, no painting, no images, nothing.
No.
The bottom was the same color as the sides and the top?
It was darker.
Different color. Clearly a different color.
Yes.
When they got it up on the truck, did they cover it?
Yes, they did.
With tarps?
There were tarps of camouflage.
How many military involved, approximately?
The ones that I seen there, there were actually four plus one.
That's it?
Yes.
Five. Did it seem to be very heavy when they lifted it, and did they use cables? How did they lift it up, or did the crane just grab onto it?
It was just a single cable with an A-frame crane.
Mm-hmm.
They just dragged it up to that L-shaped rack, and then they lean it over at probably 18 degrees or so.
Mm-hmm.
So that it would lower the height, because they had to go underneath the wires.
Okay.
Crossing through that little town there.
Oh, I see. Now, you have to go under the phone wires, the electric wires.
Yes.
On the telephone poles. Now, when they lifted it up, this is an A-frame truck. This isn't a big crane. This is an A-frame crane on the back of a truck.
It's an A-frame crane with an extension.
Okay. Did it appear that the craft was lighter than you might have thought it was, or heavy? This is a pretty big piece of machinery now.
It would have to be light, because that A-frame they had there with the truck, you know, wasn't a heavy-duty
lift. It wasn't. Okay, so it was probably light in comparison to the mass. Was there anything else that happened that you wanted to? We have about 5 or 6 minutes left. I don't want to miss anything important, so I'm going to add. Remy, is there anything else you want to add right now? And I'm going to ask you about that piece of metal at the end of.
The piece of metal, huh?
Yeah.
Well, regarding the piece of metal, my dad came up later on after I was here and with the family and so forth in the 60s. My dad came up to visit, in fact, and we're having dinner. My wife and the kids are sitting around the table, you know, with Grandpa, you know. And so he says, by the way, Remy, you know that cylinder that you fixed before you left? Yeah, it's still working. He says, I have no idea how you did it. But boy, it's still going on, you know. And I said to myself, you know, if you only knew, that was probably the first piece of applied alien technology.
Wait a minute now, I missed that. Are you saying that piece of wreckage was used to fix that cylinder?
That's right.
I missed that. How did you do it?
Well, it was like a piece of aluminum foil.
Right.
You know? And it was, the threads were worn. So I put that on the thread and we screwed that on.
To take up the space between the worn threads.
There you go. And Jose grabbed one wrench and I grabbed another one, Stilson, tightened it up, and we turned that windmill on and the water started pumping.
And we used it as a gasket.
Yeah.
To fill up the threads that had worn out.
Absolutely.
And we were amazing.
Nowadays, you would call that a heliarc.
That's right. Well, you guys invented the cell phones. You were the first two to use extraterrestrial metals to repair incredible. Now, all right, the obvious question is, what happened to the windmill and the cylinder and the repair job?
Well, the windmill, the top part of the windmill, later on, of course, the folks died, and my brother sold the house. While he was there, he took the top of the windmill apart and brought it over here, and it's being reconstructed here in Gig Harbor on this property.
Right.
His kids are putting it up.
Okay, we've got 2 minutes left. What happened to the key piece?
The key piece, later on when I went down there and checked, it's underground. It's probably in that well's been filled up, and there's a cement patio on top of there. So it may still be down there.
Somebody else's house?
Somebody else's house.
The well was filled in.
Well was filled in. Water now. They got electricity. They got phones.
How deep was it approximately?
The well was probably about 8 foot deep.
So you put that down, that cylinder at the bottom?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Now, could you find the location again, gentlemen, Jose?
Pardon?
Could you find the location of the crash again?
Yes.
Remy?
Yes. We have done a lot of work. We have photos, maps of the area. We've updated and redrawn maps because the maps that existed while we were looking didn't take us there. So we now have the exact location of the craft. Pictures of the skid area where it skidded, it's still there.
It's still there.
It's still there. Nothing ever changes in New Mexico.
Have you been back?
Yes. I've been there.
Would you like to go back with any assistance to look for pieces of metal? With advanced, maybe metal detection gear?
Sure.
Okay, that's a possibility then, because we have people out there that are more than qualified who might like to go back there with you two. I would, I have some things I want to suggest to you, which I'll talk to you about after the program. I'll give you a call back. Anything you'd like to add, Jose? I want to congratulate you on a remarkable, job of describing what you will never forget. Wonderful job. Anything you want to add?
No, not at the time. Later on, you know, I'll give you a buzz.
Okay. I'd like to add our email address.
All right. Now you're going to get a lot of emails.
Right.
Okay. What I'll do is let me get that from you.
Okay.
We'll put it up on the site.
Sure.
For people who'd like to contact you. And
in addition to that, I want to thank a lot of the people that have contacted us. They've been very helpful, and we've begun to implement some of the suggestions that they had. For one, we're in the process of bringing on board a UFO investigator.
Excellent.
To take care of that part, because we're not, you know, I mean, I don't know that much about that. Also, there's some people that have suggested that initially we had an idea, well, maybe we can get some, you know, some big outfit to go in there and excavate, and they say, no, don't do that.
No, don't do that. All right, I'll talk to you both shortly. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jose. Thank you, Remy.
All right, thank you very much.
And thanks to all of you for being here tonight, and we'll be back in 21 hours.